This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
It certainly is. 9:06. Good morning. It's Saturday the 20th. I'm Ken Connors. Walter Assey is here. 514-790-0800 to talk to the expert here. If you have any questions or issues about something that needs taken care of at home, Walter can help you. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very, very good. Did I hear you on the morning show one day this week?
You did?
What were you talking about?
I was replacing Andrew Carter.
Well, you did a great job. The show sounded fantastic.
I know.
What was the issue?
It was the price of lumber.
Oh, the price of lumber.
The price of lumber. And it's interesting to say, but think about it this way. In 2022, the Quebec Home Construction Association made a study. And they said that Quebec needs an additional 100,000 units in order to catch up with the demand of the population. Mm. Now, we're just talking demographics. We're not talking about inflation or anything like that. We're talking about just what the needs are. And so the demand is there. Okay. Now the demand was slowed down drastically by interest rates. Okay. So people, there is a kind of, if you want, a standoff in the market where the buyers are holding off because maybe some of them are nervous or they don't want to pay that much interest rate and the prices are still up there, what have you. But the question is, what happened, the demand, supply and demand, the prices of lumber went down drastically, about 62% from the height of the pandemic. That's actually good news. So the question is, for how long? Okay. So it's just a question of time until that standoff is going to have to come to an end, right? People still want to live somewhere. They need shelter.
Mm-hmm.
That need for 100,000 units additional to what we construct on average per year. So we construct about 50,000 units per year in Quebec. The idea was to start to kind of to nudge that up to 60,000 a year. So they figured in 10 years we can fill up the gap. But now even that 50,000 target we're not getting because a lot of construction companies have slowed down their development because of the uncertainty in the market, which is normal, mm-hmm. right? So what we're trying to say is, what's going to happen in the next few months, few years? Is it going to be another bubble? Are we going to have demand exploding again? These are the uncertainties that we have to look at and we have to analyze. I find putting up the interest rate just a band-aid to a problem that is inevitable. They're not really going to the source. The government is not really going to the source of the problem. We have a shortage of units. Kind of slowing it down artificially is right. Not going to solve the problem. Mm. So it's only going to lead us to a bigger problem in a few years when the demand of 100,000 is going to be maybe 150 or 200,000. So just something to ponder and think about.
Mm-hmm. 514-790-0800. If you have a question for Walter, we have one from the text line at 514-800, by the way. It's from Doug out in Vaudreuil, and he wants to know if you think it's a good idea every spring after a messy, dirty winter to take the water pressure clean the side of your house, do the driveway. You recommend that?
There's nothing wrong with it, providing you are choosing the right pressure. You can really damage your siding or even your brick if you put too much pressure. So you just have to, what I would recommend that you do is do a test first and foremost. Go on, paver or something like that, just right. to see how much pressure you have coming out. Ensure that you're always going from in a constant movement of the arm. Because if you stay for a long time in one area, you might create yourself a water damage. Okay, again, it's water pressure. So any small hole, any bit of caulking missing, might lead to a water damage. So it's just a question of continuous movement of the arm. Ensure that the areas that are problematic, where you have, for example, loose bricks, loose mortar, mm-hmm. Lack of caulking around your windows. You kind of stay away from these areas as much as possible because you don't want, again, water infiltration. And better yet, try to fix them before you do the pressure wash. That would be the best case scenario in a perfect world. But yeah, definitely, it's great. It will remove all the grime. It will remove all the dust and the salt and the pollution that is on the materials.
I got another one for you from the text line, and there's no name here, but it has to do with the cabinot out back in the backyard. Mm-hmm. And let me see if I piece this together. They're animals are digging and, making those holes around it, and they're underneath now. So what's a good way, I guess, to sort of protect that area? Like put up some sort of barrier so they can't dig there?
It depends. What do they have what do they have the cabanon under? Like, if it's usually we like to do a slab, a cement slab, and then we put it on top. That's right. The best way, because they can dig under the slab. Yeah. When you don't do that, groundhogs and are renowned to like to do these holes and go under and what have you, especially in the winter months. There's really not much to do. Unless in those areas you can put those screens. They look like, if you want to make it easier, if you go to the hardware store, these are like, if you want, what we use as trellis for to pour cement. It's metal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And you can put them in these areas around the problematic areas where the animals are coming in. You kind of dig as deep as you can, and you put them there, and that will kind of get them to try somewhere else if you wish, because it's just too much work to work through it. Beside that, for any future project for cabanos, the best thing to do is a slab when you can, a cement slab.
Yeah, it's the best. Give it a foundation.
That's correct.
Right,
yeah.
Right. 514, you were going to say something?
No.
Okay. 514-790-0800. If you want to talk to Walter, 514-790-0800. And our text line here, you can give us a text at 514-800. Of course, would you take the pressure wash to the gutters too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's a question of just getting the right amount of pressure on different materials. Pressure washing is actually the way they do gutter cleaning in most cases. They do pressure washing, especially in downspouts, to ensure that it's not clogged. So that's a very common practice. And, driveways, especially like now after the winter, we see stains on driveways, we see different things. So the best thing to do is you get products like Oil Lift or anything like that, get the stains out, then pressure wash the whole driveway, pressure wash the problematic areas. But it's a good time, again, do the caulking before, let the caulking dry in the areas that are problematic, and then off you go.
All right. The calls are starting to come in. We have one from St. Lazare ready to go. Two more that Jimmy is handling right now. 514-790-0800. It's a free hour of advice from a guy with years of experience in the home renovation business, Walter Assey from Renovco.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
We're back. Call now. Talk to Walter. 514-790-0800. You have questions, we have answers. Like, let's go to St. Lazare. Is it Edmond?
Yes, it is. It's Edmond.
Edmond, very nice. How are you this morning?
Good, good. I'm stopped, so it should be clearer.
All right, very good. You want to talk about your basement? What's the issue?
Okay, so it's a townhouse with townhouses on both sides, built in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. The basement floor has just been replaced, so there's a vapor barrier under the basement floor before they poured the concrete. Now, the question is additional vapor barrier. First question, do I still need to put a vapor barrier underneath the wood framing, underneath the base plate of the wood framing to prevent humidity from coming up from the concrete onto the wood 2x4? That's question one. Mm-hmm. Question two is, on one side, it's the other basement. So I'm assuming the temperature is good there. Do I need a vapor barrier there on the warm side of the insulation? And on the other side of the basement is the garage, right? So that's full of sand before they put the concrete floor of the basement. Do I need a vapor barrier there? So those are the questions. The front and back is standard practice. There's no problem there. It's the sides that are exposed to the garage sort of pit on one side and other basement on the other side and the floor. Do I need a vapor barrier to protect the wood?
Okay. That's all great question. The first part of the question. So when you are in the basement, you're going to get a hygrometer and you're going to see what the relative humidity in your basement is right now. And, you know, we're going to need to choose humid days, obviously, just to see what percentage we go at. That's your first indication. Second indication is any musty smell. So if you go to the basement, you feel it's dry, the air is not humid, there's no musty smell, there's no signs of efflorescence anywhere, there's no signs of, you know, condensation on the concrete or anything like that. That is an indication of how well insulated the slab is. Having said that, I don't like to use a vapor barrier per se on the slab. When I say vapor barrier, I mean the 6 mil one that we usually put on walls. A good thing to use would be more a delta membrane. Okay, it's a lot more superior, and I don't know if you've seen it before, but it looks like it's what you usually would put around the foundation. It's like an air gap membrane to have bubbles in it, so it allows for the flow of water to the drain. But most importantly, it's going to act as a barrier between the wood touching the concrete, okay, and rotting with time. So it's going to protect your wood. That's, for me, even if you would have had a superior type of insulated slab, I would still put it because you can't have wood touching concrete anyways. The humidity in the concrete would rot the wood eventually.
Edmund?
Okay. Yes. Okay.
You wanted to say something before?
Well, the front and back, there has been, when they took out the old concrete, there was a bit of water infiltration between the wall and the footing. So they did put that delta membrane on the inside before they poured the concrete floor. But we're going to put a vinyl flooring, so I gather we're not going to put any other vapor barrier. But you said under the wood, fine, I'll put a vapor barrier under the framing. Okay. And on the sides to the next basement and to where the garage is filled in, I guess I'll put a vapor barrier on the warm side as well.
Are we talking about the walls now?
Yeah. Walls.
So on the walls, what I like to do, you don't necessarily need to put a vapor barrier in those areas because they're technically not considered exterior walls. But what I like to do is maybe the first 3 feet or 4 feet, just to kind of make it wrap around in case there's any, at the junction, if there's any weakness. That's what I would like to do.
Sure.
But technically, you don't need to put it in those sides. You sometimes don't even need to insulate those sides either.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Edmund. Appreciate the call. We have time to sneak in Daisy, who's in St. Laurent. Hi, Daisy.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. You want to talk about your washing machine?
No, I want to talk about the tap that supplies the water into the washing machine.
Right.
Okay. I was told by a friend that his insurance company says you have to turn off the tap after each time you've used the washing machine. Now, I have this tap, and I've never changed it, I guess, for 35 years. So I decided that after washing, I turn off the tap. And then when I wanted to use it again yesterday, I turned it on. And that was that. So after finishing washing, and when I went downstairs to go and turn it off, I found water on the floor. So, and I felt it. So the water was dripping from the, the handle that you turn the tap, the faucet?
Yeah.
It was wet. So I guess it comes from there and not the washing machine. So I want to know why, if it never gave any problem, they say when it's not broken, don't fix it. But then I was told otherwise the insurance company won't pay you if the pipe from the washing machine bust.
Okay. To be quite frank, I haven't even heard of that before. That's the first time I hear of that. So.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But apparently he had the problem before when his tap, the tube from the to go into the tap, the washing machine, busted. So the insurance company says you have to turn it off every time you've used it.
I mean, that would have that, then this would have applied to the toilets, to the faucets, to anything else, even to the garden hose outside. So I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure that that's the case. I can inquire. I've never heard of that.
Okay.
You could possibly just have a dried up washer inside, so it could be a very easy fix as far as you're concerned with the dripping. Okay.
That means I have to check. I have to change I have to take off the line and then put in the new washer.
Yeah, possibly. It's not a difficult fix. I mean, any person that is a bit handy could do it. The thing is, the good news for you, it's not a broken pipe.
No, it's not.
If it's a broken pipe, you would have known, trust me, the whole house would have been like...
Oh, yes, I know that. Yes, I've
continuous.
Had it before.
Yeah, so it's just a question of, a couple of dollars for the materials, and that's it. It's not really a big deal. You just open it up, you change the washer, and then you should be good.
Okay. I
will inquire for you, insurance-wise, about the fact that you should close it every time you use it. To be quite frank with you, I don't even do that. So, if that's the case, then I'm not like but then again, I mean, look, insurance companies sometimes they come out with new rules all the time. So, we've had cases just for old furnace. We've had cases where, people had water damage because of washing machines failing or through the faucet or the pipe, and they were always covered. So I can't really tell you that I've had an experience where they said that shouldn't have happened.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank
now
you, Daisy.
Now I shall put back it on, turn it on, and never touch it.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Bye
have
now.
A good day.
Bye-bye. I was going to tell her I was going to head over later after the show with a load of whites just to take care of. Walter standing by for more of your phone calls at 514-790-0800 or reach us through the text line at 514-800. We're coming back right after the news.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
It's Ken Connors, Jimmy G and Master Control, and Walter Assey from Renovco is here as usual to answer your calls on a Saturday morning on the Home Improvement Show. And he's got a team of people he relies on, and they've got great taste because they always listen to the Home Improvement Show as well.
That's right. It's crazy. And we have nice experts, chiming in every now and then. During the break, lots happened. We had a text from an insurance broker that he said he never heard of that.
That's
so
right.
That's good.
About the washing machine and turning it off, right?
That's
turning
correct.
The water off, yeah.
So that is coming from a mouth of a more, if you wish, versed expert in insurance.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got something from one of my maintenance guys for appliances.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer, in short, is no, you should not turn off the water supply faucets after the washing machine stops washing, rinsing, and spinning dry. The washing machine has an automatic programmed unit or the control center to open the valves or shut off the valves to let hot or cold water in after the sensors has weighed the load of clothes. So if you turn off the water faucets, sometimes you forget to turn them back on. And after loading your clothes, you have started the washing machine a few minutes later, the clock or timer will start running, but no water.
Yeah.
Your washing machine will not run, and the cycles and the program setting up will be running in the wrong order. The water won't be drained, or the washer will be working abnormally. So it's a bad idea to turn it off.
There you go, Daisy. All right, we followed up for you, and Walter, what Walter told you was absolutely correct. And our insurance broker... called in and said he had never come across that policy in all his years of working in the business. 9:37. We're going to go to Natalie in St. Michel. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. You're on with Walter. Tell him about your roof.
Yeah, it's a shingle roof, and it was in April. I was looking out of the kitchen window, looking at it, and I saw like a mist or smoke rising off it. I got really scared. I ran around. I thought maybe there's a fire somewhere or something, and there was nothing. And then I thought about it, and I know in the summer when the sun really shines on it, you can see heat rising off it, you know? And I wondered if because of the temperature change in April, or maybe because there was rain before that this happened, it was a natural phenomenon or something for a shingle roof.
What color is it? Are your shingles?
Blue, navy blue.
Okay, so they're dark.
Yes.
Yeah. So that happens when you have difference in temperature, okay? So when you have, let's say, a hot day, for example, and all of a sudden it starts raining, you could potentially have that. The other time you'll see that if you have any heat escaping from your attic. I don't know how good your insulation is in the attic. Have you ever checked it?
Oh, there is no insulation. It's a cathedral ceiling.
No insulation whatsoever?
No.
Okay. So that could be the culprit in the sense that you have the hot air from your home kind of meeting a colder air in your attic and creating that that type of phenomenon. There's nothing wrong. It's not smoke. It's not fire. It's nothing like that. The only thing that you usually look at in cases like this is premature deterioration of your shingles. If you feel that you're changing your shingles way more often, if they're curling, they're drying, they're separating, then you have to kind of look further to see what can be done in the attic to correct that. But I mean, that really happens all the time, especially when you have change in weather.
Mm. Oh, okay. Well, that's a relief because my other option was to think that maybe I had a poltergeist or something. So at least I know I'm safe both physically and spiritually.
Yes, Natalie, rest. You're okay. Fine. Thanks for calling.
Great. Thank you so much.
I can't help so much with the spiritual part.
You can only do so much.
Yeah, the technical I can help.
Here's a few more from the text line. By the way, the phone number to talk to Walter is 514-790-0800. I want to ask you, throw one at you here. It was a text from a few minutes ago about bay windows. It says, good morning, guys. I'm shopping for bay windows. They list the size here, 110 by 96, 110 inches by 96 inches. So far, according to the texter, installation for two of them is roughly $25,000 to $30,000. They're wondering, is that the fair price?
The height is fairly, 96 is a high window, so you're talking about 8 feet high. It sounds and bay windows, a standard bay window is usually, I would say, anywhere between 6,000 to 8,000.
Mm-hmm.
Good quality ones, mm-hmm. of course. Now you, if they're wood, then that drastically goes higher. In their case, it's 8 feet high. So that sounds just about right.
Okay. Ballpark? All right.
Yeah,
very good.
Sounds about right.
Another one here. It says, good morning. This is Valerie. What are your thoughts on epoxy flooring for the garage, given our winters? I park my car inside every day. I worry about the salt and wondering about warranty on these type of products. And of course, they're looking for a recommendation as well. So you were telling me about epoxy flooring, right?
I love it.
Yeah,
it's especially granulated epoxy. It's anti-slip. It lasts a long time. You can have any color you want, almost, and it makes your garage looks clean. It kind of seals the cement in place, so you don't have that cement powder that with time degradation of cement that you. That creates dust and all kind of cement dust in your floor that you drag to the house. So there are a lot of advantages to it. And it does last a long time. Now, of course, the installation is important. We can recommend a couple of installers that we know they're really, really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But be careful when the job gets done. it can get to be messy because they have to grind the concrete before they apply the epoxy. So just make sure that they do extremely good clean sealing, like zipper sealant to the house, not just by closing the door. That's not enough at all, because that fine dust will find its way in. And my other advice is to turn off your furnace when you get this done.
Okay.
Preferably in a nicer day where they can have the garage door open while they're doing it. Some better contractors have put negative air machines to suck the dust out. So it's just not, you know, when they're doing it, the first day it's usually a bit more messy. But then, of course, the application is nothing.
We'll sneak this one before we go to traffic, Walter. So about a minute and a half here from Three Rivers. I'm pouring a new deck this summer. I'd like Walter's opinion about the idea of having heated concrete. Snow comes off the roof and I want to maintain outdoor access through the patio door.
It's a thing now. It's. I mean, I like it. It just, you have to look at how much space you have on your panel.
Mm.
Because it does take some juice out of the panel, obviously. So just, you know, if you have the standard 200 amp panel, and then you have a spa or a swimming pool, electric furnace,
the demand is high.
It might become problematic as far as amperage is concerned. Mm. But as something that works, it's fantastic. I mean, we do it now. You see it a lot in heated driveways and, you know, heated landings and heated stairs. So yeah, it's becoming a lot more common.
514-790-0800 to talk to Walter. Call now and grab a line. Again, 514-790-0800.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show. CJAD 800.
You are. Walter Assey from Renovco sitting on the other side of the table from me, and you want to do a follow-up on the heated floors.
Yes. We were talking about how much the concrete floors would require if you're going to heat it outside.
Right.
And just because you might get confused with the heated floors inside, which doesn't take a lot of amperage. Usually heated floors in a bathroom, for example, take 1 to 4 amps.
Mm-hmm.
Outside is another story. For every 170 square feet, you would need about 30 amps. So if your back deck is, let's say, 400 square feet, mm-hmm. you need minimum 60 amps.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I'm saying make sure you look at the panel and the size of the panel and what you have available in there before you embark into this adventure.
Very good. 514-790-0800. Celine is on the line. Hi, Celine.
Hi, how are you, gentlemen?
Very good. You're on with Walter. Tell him what you want to, what your issue is.
Yeah, so we're doing some renovation on a new triplex that we purchased in Rosemount, and it's from 1959, and we stripped the entire basement, the main floor, etc., and now obviously we'll have plumbing to do because we're moving bathrooms and kitchens around, etc. Several plumbers that have come in have told us that we should, since we've stripped everything, we should change, you know, the main cast iron tube that's under the slab of the house, which, you know, evacuates to outside, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. guess, to the, yeah, so it's about, I don't know, 20 feet long, I would say. From that age, do you think it would be time to change the would be disintegrating? We did have a camera come in to check. They said it's not so bad, but obviously it's has its age, right? We would have to dig in, and apparently the slab is 12 inches. We would have to cut around, you know, and dig that up.
Yeah. So 12 inches is an impressive slab.
Yeah.
That's double as much as a regular slab. I don't know why they did that, but it's good.
This has a few strange things that were done to that house, actually.
It doesn't hurt. You know, 12-inch slab, it doesn't hurt at all. It's there. So if you pass the camera, okay, and mm-hmm. the one thing that's super important is when you do pass the camera, you have mm-hmm. to go all the way to the connection of the city, and
yes.
you know, and look at the whole condition.
They did. They did. They said on the outside part there are no branches or tree roots or anything. But they're all still, you know, recommending, since everything is under renovation, why not do it?
I mean, for sure, at this time, it's the best time in the sense that you are in complete reno, and you're not, you know, you're not there yet, so you're not doing any finishings. But again, I mean, if it's in good shape, I don't see the reason, especially that you're going to be cutting a 12-inch slab.
Yeah, exactly, even though it's from 1959.
Yeah, I mean,
they
look,
they
do corrode with time, but it, again, the camera is really your best indication to how bad things are. And if they are in good shape, I don't see the reason why you would have to embark into changing all of them, especially like if you're saying it's good all the way to the outside, that's actually excellent news.
Yeah, okay. As well, they're recommending, obviously, from those years, you know, the tubes up to the main floor and up to the second floor apartments are all in steel, you know, and old cast iron. Yeah. They're recommending I change those as well.
Well, if everything is demolished, I could see the reasoning for that.
For those,
In the sense that, look, it will cost you a fraction of what usually it would have costed you if you would have had to demolish and do it.
Exactly.
Right now, I mean, the rough material is not super expensive. Mm-hmm. It's not very time-consuming. He can get to it extremely fast. So in one day, they could do a lot of work to plumbers. Mm-hmm. So it might be worth it just because it's your last chance to get to it if you're going with that major rental. Mm-hmm. So that I could understand.
Okay.
How's that, Celine?
Yeah, it's perfect. If you do have 1 minute, did you ever? Okay, I told you the slab had 12 inches thick because we got some testing done. However, if you've ever heard of this, there was another slab on top that we removed, which had a 6-inch gravel and another 4-inch cement.
Okay, that's weird.
On top of the entire basement and garage as well.
Okay, that's
just
weird.
Odd. Yeah, that's just weird. Odd, right?
I've never heard of a slab. I mean, even commercial slabs. Yeah,
and I'm wondering why they could have. No one seems to answer. It was an estate sale, so obviously the individual.
Well, I mean, look, it depends how big. I mean, I've seen it in big structures where you would have to do for counterweight purposes certain areas in the slab that are poured more thick, but not in a triplex. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen it in big homes, 45 feet in the air, where you know the structural engineer would ask for these things, and they call it mass, but not and it's not throughout the whole area. It's like it's through certain areas on the slab. I can't really tell you.
Yeah,
I don't know if you would have access to the structural plans to see how originally it was built.
It wouldn't be registered.
Maybe the city would have them. Yeah,
So I will, I'll try that then for my own benefit, just to see if there had been an issue or a problem or, you know.
If there's a problem, to be quite frank with you, I don't see, because slab is not structural. So what kind of problem? Do we have water infiltration? Do we have a high water table? And that's not really how you solve the problem.
Okay.
If you have, you know.
What if there was a high water table? Because
then
the neighbors have mentioned, it seems like there might have been a stream going under this area.
That could be understood, but that could be very easily solved with some pumps more than with the thicker slabs.
Yeah.
How high is your basement? You're telling me there's 12 plus 6, there's 18 inches. There's 22 inches worth of slab.
It was 8 feet with the entire thing. Imagine now that we removed another 10 inches of gravel, which was actually humid in certain areas, but we're thinking that there were some broken tubes that were coming from the pit in front of the garage door.
If you do have a high water table, look into additional sump pumps, or maybe a sump pump if you don't have one, but I don't see why you would want to go with that crazy amount of concrete.
Celine, you have quite the project on your hands.
I know, it's a large, very, very large project,
All
right.
Good for you, though.
That was helpful.
All right, thanks, Celine.
Thank you so much.
Bye now.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Walter, thank you.
Oh, my God, my pleasure. Right. Sorry, I know we have a lot of callers we couldn't get to, but the last caller was a bit special, situation we don't usually hear, so we'd like to spend a bit more time on it.
Yeah, that's a good reminder, too, to call in early on the Home Improvement Show right at 9 and grab a line at 514-790-0800. Have a good week. We'll see you next Saturday.
Absolutely.
All right, that's Walter Assey from Renovco. I'm Ken Connors. Going to step aside here, let Tom Whalen get you up to date, and then give the chair to Lisa for the car show, which is coming up next.